everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Meta. I'm your host, Jay Larson, and joining me this week, we have three of the five winning players of the this year's WTC, the team from Norway. So hello, guys. How are you doing?
Hi, Jay. We're doing fine.
Hi, Jay. Couldn't do better.
I bet, yeah.
Not really.
So why don't we go ahead and have each of you guys go ahead and introduce yourselves.
Sure. My name is Sverre, and I play, well, for WTC this year, I played Retribution. But I came from Crux, and I think my love is still somewhere back there for Crux, so we'll see.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Christian, and I'm a Menoth player.
Hey, I'm Kuba, and I've been playing War Machine for 9 years now, trying to win this thing for since it started. And I used to play Mercenaries back in Mark II. Now it's been Menoth for a couple of years, and I'll try some more Mercs right after, or I already started on trying on Mercs.
So I need to start this out with an apology. So we've already recorded the Chain Attack episode where we talk about your guys' victory, and it's not released yet. It'll be up later in the week, and I promise that I do know and understand Scandinavian geography, and my last name's Larson, so you know my ancestors are from Denmark, and yeah. I said on Chain Attack, like, I kept fumbling and for some reason saying that it was the Finnish team that won the WTC, and then I would correct myself, and then I would say again that it was Finland that won. So anyways, hopefully I won't come off as much of a stupid American in this episode.
I did wait around in a Finnish shirt after we won. I actually fell asleep in a and it as well, so at least it's a good excuse.
Close enough.
Excellent. Okay, well, so real quick, I'll go over the format of what we're going to be doing, and then we can dive right in. So the meta, we end up having kind of a part A, a part B, and each part ends up being about 45 to 50 minutes, and we have questions that get sent to us from our $2 supporters on Patreon. And so some of them will be questions from the listeners. And then once we'll continue the conversation in the second half, and people who back the Patreon will be able to listen to that part as well. A lot of the questions are focused on Retribution because I wasn't sure what other factions were going to be. That's who else was going to be joining here on, sure, on the podcast. But I'll have plenty of questions for the Menoth players as well. So we should hopefully have a good conversation. I don't think it's going to be a problem.
Good talk.
So the first question is going to come from James Morehouse, Chrono. And this one is more of a general question. But he says, what would you guys say was the secret recipe for this year's success? Did you do more practice games, unique lists, handsome good looks? And he prefaced it by saying that he understands that you guys have been performing well at the WTC for a while now. And so I think he was kind of asking, you know, what is it that kind of pushed things over this year?
Who starts? Maybe I will start. From my perspective, for 2 years ago, we were pretty close, but we missed out on something. And I personally wasn't sure what was it. I thought it was just amount of practice. Last year, it didn't go, like, the competition didn't go as good for us as we expected. We didn't have Sverre on the team. Then I thought, what was our biggest problem? You know, not succeeding last year. And then I've noticed that we fall back on international meta a little bit. And this year, I've decided to push a lot on going around to different tournaments, checking out different metas. And so I was ready, you know, like list-wise, you know, I exactly knew what's going on. Mm-hmm. And we all travel and we all shared experience. And I think that, of course, we train very hard, you know, for game-wise, you know, for getting there. But that was a milestone for me, at least.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's worth noting that we don't play like ungodly amounts or go to all the tournaments. Like we play regularly, but we don't overdo it.
Okay.
From my point of view, this year is just that we nailed everything. Like the team that was chosen out, we played our own list. We didn't like copy the meta. We got a lot of shit for not playing Circle, for example, but we just played to our strength.
Yeah, I think it was actually interesting that I think everyone was prepping really hard to answer Circle.
Mm-hmm.
And so you guys not having Circle in your pairing, I think, was an interesting way to go. It seems like a lot of the preparation that people had made was maybe not as useful. Did you guys feel like that ended up being the case?
We actually swapped out Circle during the summer. They fell a little behind after the changes for requisition options.
Uh-huh.
The small changes to Lord of the Feast as well was important for just board space control. And it didn't feel like they had the answers for the other hard factions in the game.
Okay.
Yeah.
So one of my confessions is that in my local meta, we have very little Menoth, and so I don't get as much practice versus Menoth as I would like. And when I looked at your guys' team and I saw the double Menoth list that you guys took, I was kind of terrified. So how did you guys feel that double Menoth played out for you guys?
Well, I think this is the third year in a row we're playing double Menoth.
Yeah.
So it's always been kind of we play each other good, but it's still a gamble if the pool isn't big enough. Like if something like if the Menoth Archon weren't as broken as they were, for example, we might have looked at other opportunities. But as Menoth is now, it would be almost be insane for us not to play double Menoth.
Yeah, I really do agree with that. Menoth was probably one of the factions that came out of the changes during the summer in the best way. Both due to the Archons, but also how they kept the strong parts of their list intact, while some of the other factions got changes that didn't really help them that much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I did play a lot of Menoth in Mark 1, and I played a fair bit at the start of Mark 2, and it does seem like it would be a really good time to come back to playing with the Creator of Man, so...
For sure. If you cannot handle the big sculpts of the Archons, welcome back.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's go with another listener question. So PYQZ says, are there viable competitive casters in Rhett besides Gareth II and Assyria, or are those two casters propping up the faction by themselves?
The short answer is no. The long answer is, I think there is, but it's so hard to cover the other factions without playing Gareth.
Mm. Yeah.
And you basically bring Assyria just to cover the part where Gareth struggles.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel one of the big hits in Retribution the last year was Gorshed 4. I played him a bit. He's still a really good caster, but at the highest level, people tend to ignore his feet. And when people learned that they can ignore his feet because you don't have the board control to make it matter enough, he just falls off the curve. And there's a lot of things in the meta now that sees to Cloud. Cloud Walls isn't as strong as it was in Mark 2.
Mm.
And then it boils down to the unit choices of Retribution, and they're okay, but they aren't the best if you look at the other factions. And Retribution do one thing really, really well, that is shooting. And Gorshed 4 is not that great for shooting, and Gareth 2 is really, really good for shooting.
Yeah. Okay. So the next question's from Hesse. He has some questions about your meta and prep you guys did for the WTC. He says, how big is your local meta?
Well, it kind of depends on when in the year you ask us. I would say like the last month or something like that before the WTC, it becomes really small just because we're playing to the best of our abilities. We're playing our super hard list. And if you don't kind of like want to play on the same competitive level, you start to find reasons not to play against us. So it becomes really like mostly Norway Hugin and Norway Munin playing against each other. And then like everything we can do to go to trips like to Sweden and to the Czech Republic. Yeah, those kinds of tournaments. But we're hoping that this will help our meta now. But it's not really that big.
I would say in total we might have up to like 30 something players, but it varies a lot during the year, simply because, well, also as Christian said, it's reason for training to the VTC, but also a lot of the players like the game in a period and they need to do something else like family or want to do something else.
Mm. Yeah. But for us, like WTC wise, when we're talking about preparation for WTC, I think we're in a very good spot because there are two competitive teams, and in total we have 15, maybe over 15 competitive players that can still bring the game, and everyone can push us now. Like, I think we have some monsters in the meta, you know, that aren't even on the team, you know, and they're still bringing fantastic impact input, you know, to our preparation. So I feel super lucky with what we have here.
I think also worth noting is that the travel distance for us to go to like Battle at Lund, which is a tournament in Sweden, and it's quite short compared to the travel distances, for instance, in the US.
Yeah.
So we do know a lot of the guys from England and from Denmark and from Sweden and
Poland.
Yeah, because we see them around in tournaments.
Right, right. Yeah, one of the questions, follow-up questions that he had about your meta was asking if you do much travel to the various parts of Norway to compete, but it sounds like it's more international travel that you guys end up doing.
Yeah, it's worth noting that we have our own club in the central of Oslo, like 100 square meters, 100 plus. We have a lot of players like you. You have your own locker. You have terrains and tables all set up. We have our own keys. So for us, it's really easy to get out a really big load of games in a short time. So we're only like hindered by our own time to actually play as many games as we want.
So next question, another question he had was, did you guys use any tools or methodologies that used with data gathering or matchups or stuff like that, that you guys did to, as preparing for the WTC?
Not really. What we have seen in the past when we tried to bring too much data into the preparation is that the input is wrong.
Right.
We end up having wrong input every time we try to overanalyze things in advance. Of course, we analyze factions and lists and try to find solutions when we are building both the team and sort of with factions and the lists. But when it comes to the more like raw data analysis from like tournaments, who's winning and who's not, it's probably bitten us more in the ass in the past than it gained us any advantage. So we went back to a more basic approach of, well, bring lists that are good, win your fucking game.
Yeah, basically.
Okay. All right, so we'll get back to some listener questions. I wanted to alternate that some with talking about some of the lists that you guys played. So first off, why don't we go ahead and start with Christian. Christian, your two lists, you took Cyrenia one, she was in Faithful Masses. She had two Dervishes, a Sanctifier, a Hierophant, the Avatar of Menoth, two Allegiant of the Order of the Fist, two Champions of the Order of the Wall, a Hand of Silence, two Menite Archons, the Covenant of Menoth, a Rack, a Choir of Menoth Men, and three Initiates of the Wall. And then for your other list, you had a Warriors of the Old Faith list with Vlad III, Adjudicator, two Champions of the Order of the Wall, Fenris, a Hand of Silence, the Hermit of Henchold, a High Paladin Darton Vilmon, the Manowar Dracoon, two Menite Archons, Yuri the Axe, the Choir of Menoth Men unit, and then Initiates of the Order of the Wall, one unit.
Great.
So why don't you walk us through those lists real quick?
Yeah, I can start off with the Vlad III. There's a good reasoning behind me wanting to start with that list.
Sure.
But this list was thought of as a Harby and Grimkin counter originally. So you have like the double Archons, you have Fenris there with the Grievous, you have Judicator that runs 14 and then threatens 17 on sprays on turn 2, and just a lot of good hard to kill solos. So what I discovered the day before VTC playing a practice game against Pat is that when you play against Dreamer, when they create the Phantasms, that doesn't trigger Righteous Vengeance or the +2 strength and armor on the Archons. So that was really good finding that out there and then, because then suddenly my matchup went from a +1 against Grimkin to a -1. And I also discovered the last couple of weeks before VTC that actually my Serenia list was better into Harby than, or generally Mirror, than Vlad III was. But the really fun thing about my pairing is that when I did the pairing, and also like I saw in tournaments in Lund, is that everybody was super scared of Vlad III list and paid no attention to Serenia, which is funny because I played Serenia all my games.
Interesting. So why do you think people were so scared of the Vlad III list?
The Vlad has long threats. It's kind of unknown. It's maybe has the most stupid Judicator setup with double Hand of Fate or speed 7 with boosted attacks against melee. And it's really fast with the reroll to start. So it can really punish some lists by going first and being on the middle of the table and then saying that if you go out of your deployment zone, I will charge you with everything. And with feet, I will sidestep and sprint backwards again.
Okay.
And they probably see Serenia as a bad Harvey. Pretty much.
Okay, so let me, real quick, before we go back to Serenia, I'll confess that I super love the Warriors of the Old Faith list, and I've said this on several podcasts already, but I'll look at them, and I think they look amazing, they look exciting, and like I have no clue if it's actually a good list. And so...
It is actually really good. I think that if my second list wasn't Serenia, I would play Vlad III more games and still have good, fun games. It's really a hard list to play because you have so few models, but it's really fun. I love that theme so much.
Okay. So why is Serenia not just bad Harbinger?
Where to start? No, the thing about Serenia is that I noticed that during her Sid, and like from the beginning I saw her, is that she's super good in Faithful Masses, and her toolbox and spells are amazing. She doesn't have one bad spell on her list, and all of them are like, I want to cast every spell every turn, as well as the feat being more tricky and gotcha than people realize, especially when you put it in a theme where everything is defense 13 or almost higher. Then suddenly you have a list that is both a def skew and an arm skew with a lot of shenanigans and movement. Movement shenanigans. It does everything.
Yeah, I also think it's interesting that last year one of the Menoth lists that was kind of popular, it seemed like, at WTC was a two colossal list at where you had both of them getting an armor buff and then using Sirenia's rock wall to block landing spaces onto them. This is obviously a very different build and different way to play Sirenia. What do you think of this archetype with her versus, say, the two Colossal?
Well, SR19, I think, really killed that list and most double Judicator lists, just because the scenario is so high up in the middle and so fast that it becomes kind of hard to protect the Judis or not just lose on scenario, as well as you lose a lot of the good abilities of Sirenia by having the double Judicator instead of lots of small units and good solos and actually can play on the scenario, like being really good in scenario instead of being bad on scenario.
Right. Yeah, that was definitely seemed like, and you know, with the changes in Steamroller, I would be probably a little bit terrified of playing that style of list. So
I think it's a side note here as well that Sirenia is probably one of the casters in mana that gained most from the requisition changes, because she was kind of stuck taking things she didn't really want to get most of her free points.
Yeah.
But since she has more of a mixed army approach where she brings both jacks for damage and infantry and solos for
more damage,
or or support or whatever you call it. It seems she was one of the mixed casters that got a lot from the changes in her requisition options.
Yeah, absolutely. Being able to bring the new cheaper avatar and still having all 9 free initiates were a huge part of us choosing that list.
Yeah. So I guess what are some of your final thoughts on this pairing before we move on to some other questions?
I think I talked to the guys after VTC when we were like heading home. I think that Vlad became the wrong pairing with the list just because he didn't handle Grimkin as good as we wanted. I think if we'd turn the clock backwards like 2 months, I'd probably play Sirenia with Krios 3 double Vengers, just because it complements the list better. And I still, I think then I have a really good flexible two lists pairing, which can almost play into anything.
Awesome. Okay, so let's get back to asking some retribution questions.
Sure.
Hawkfrost says, how would you pitch retribution to a new player? And then how would you pitch them to an experienced player?
How do you pitch them to a new player? I think I would pitch them as they're kind of like the Wood Elves in Lord of the Rings. Or if you play Warhammer, they're kind of like the guerrilla army, where you have a lot of models that likes not heading into your enemy straight on, but more like a tactical see if I can shoot you up approach, which I think there isn't that much of in the game otherwise. And they have a lot of special shots as well, which really complements that kind of playstyle where you have like it's a toolbox shooty army, something like that.
Okay.
For a more experienced player, I would say it gives
it's Garrett too.
It's Garrett too. At the moment, it's Garrett too. I actually started playing Retribution because of Kalissa, and I still think she's one of the funniest casters to play in faction, but she's fallen a little bit behind in the current meta. But what she brought back in the day in Mark II was the really, really, really cool original Forces of War list, which allowed you to take all the Warjacks before power-ups happened, if you remember that, Jay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And for the experienced player, I would say they're still a really, really good toolbox faction. They have a lot of tools that allow you to do fun synergies. But they have both the advantage of really good shooting and it's a disadvantage as well, because if you meet people that handle shooting, if you get boards with too much terrain, or it doesn't really work that well. And so it's both an advantage and a disadvantage, I think.
So while you guys were having fun in at the WTC and kicking ass, there was a thread that in the Retribution Facebook group that kind of exploded, where there was a player who said that basically that he was kind of dissatisfied with Retribution, and that he was hoping that the developers would kind of explain why they did some of the changes around Oblivion. How have you felt about the faction post Oblivion?
I think they're worse off than they were. I really liked where Shadows were heading with the Ambushers. Mm-hmm. And I'm quite sad that they took that away. And I'm also not that much a fan of the special ability in Legions, where they give the Warjacks of Jack Marshall's flank. It's a really cool ability on paper that doesn't really work that well when you play it. It would be so much better if you could take the Arcanist unit to have like a proper focus pull, but they're not allowed in Legions, so it feels like an ability for Forges that's been put in Legions. And I think a lot of the problems for Retribution is that what was in fact more of a solution to different kind of problems after Oblivion turned into only the shooty armies really work. And I can understand why a lot of people playing Retribution feel like they got cheated a little from the Oblivion update. I do think White Archons will help Shadows, but they are still lacking some model options due to them being originally a limited faction. And I still think that shines through in every of the team forces except Defenders of Ios, which is still not an amazing theme force due to the Trident being so overpowered that you always want to take them, and that moves you away from a more melee-oriented list.
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting. It seemed like one of the things that happened with Oblivion is that some of the themes which were not the strongest themes in Retribution got slightly worse, and so it led to kind of a narrowing of the faction so that you felt like you had even fewer options on what you could play or what you could take and be competitive with.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. And also that Legions now can take double Tridents without suffering any of the like points consequences for it.
Right.
It's,
yeah.
It's really bad for the faction because it's another list where you want to take double Tridents.
Right.
And that model is really good.
Yes.
But it's also hurting the faction, I think, because it's become a model that you rely so much of your army plan on that model.
Mm-hmm.
You might not need two, but if you don't bring one, I can't make any list in Retribution now that right. This doesn't bring one, and that limits teams by themselves.
Yeah, we'll get to your lists here in a while, but it is interesting that I'm pretty sure I remember from looking at it that your Garrath 2 list has one Trident and one Arcantric Force Generator, but it's not the standard double Trident list.
No, it's not. It's more of a melee approach to the Garrath army, just to try to make it do something more than bringing all the guns.
Right, right.
And for me, at least, I did a lot of thinking about it when Oblivion dropped. Do I still want to pay full price for the Fey Knights? Do I still want to take a heavy Warjack? And during my games, I felt a lot of the games I didn't really use them, and they could probably be swapped out for something better. But in my hard games, I really needed them to do something else.
Mm.
It feels like if you take all the shooting,
right,
you're going a little over the top where you're winning more against the things right. You're already beating.
Sure.
But you're struggling more in some of the matchups that could be better if you have just some more melee options.
Okay, so let's go ahead and talk about the other Protectorate pairing that you guys played. So The next one we have Krios 1 in the Creator's Might. He has Adjudicator, 2 Exemplar Warders, Exemplar Warder Elias Gade, a Hermit of Henchhold, 2 Menite Archons, Severius Zero with 2 Redeemers, a Vassal Mechanic, a Min Choir, a Min Pressgangers, and Visgoth Roven and Honor Guard. Then the second list is Faithful Masses with the Harbinger, 3 Crusaders, a Sanctifier, a Hierophant, 2 Allegiants of the Order of the Fist, 2 Champions of the Order of the Wall, a Hand of Silence, 2 Menite Archons, a Covenant of Menoth, 2 Vassal Mechanics, a Choir of Menoth Min, and 3 Initiates of the Wall.
Yeah.
So, why don't you go ahead and give us a rundown of these lists?
All right, so maybe I will start with Krios 1. That list was put together maybe 1 week before we had to submit our lists. And I was very confident playing Harvey, of course. I played her through all the season. And I had we went to Battle of Lund a month before WTC. And then I figured out that I really struggle against Grimkins. I thought that maybe Grimkins aren't as hard for Harvey as I thought, but then Pat Dunford verified me in a brutal way just by using Labyrinth Arcana, most of the players, they're using Accursed against Harvey, and that's a mistake. They pretty much always should use Labyrinth, in my opinion, and they can set up, if they have a proper table, then there is no game for Harvey there.
So what is it about the Labyrinth Arcana that you think makes the matchup so difficult for the Harbinger?
Because he's pushing with clocks, and then clock, it's in threat range of your army. Then you're going in on the clock with one piece. Clock jumps, he plays Labyrinth Arcana, and then all of a sudden you're just out of threat ranges. Mm. And he will have another punch turn after.
Okay.
Pretty much that, you know, like you can push, but he will slow you down and he will get his alpha back on track.
Okay. So you got some, you'd felt kind of confident about Harbinger into Grimkin and then realized you probably needed to go with another option. And so I'm assuming that's kind of what you were trying to accomplish with Krios 1, is that correct?
That's correct. And then we tried a couple of options. I tried a double Judicator. I understood that it's a very powerful build, but it's missing scenario pieces, you know, and also will be that's a list that will be very punished by Old Witch. So then we started like shuffling things around. I add a unit of Pressgangers that is, first of all, great scenario piece. Second of all, it's great against Grimkins, Old Witch that goes very much on the flank with armor piercing guys. I'm not sure what's their name.
Knightslayers.
Knightslayers, yeah.
Yeah.
I figure out that 2 Redeemers are extremely efficient against clocks. Mm-hmm. With a little bit of luck, or sometimes I can get it, sometimes I don't, but I have a chance to take out 1 clock just with Redeemers before Krios fit, because he has a problem with jumping from their long threat range. And then I add 2 Archons that are also great against clocks. But as an add-on, they got 2 warders. So with bodyguard ability and defender's ward, they became extremely hard to hit, especially for Old Witch army. Like Night Slayers are hitting on a charge attack. They need to roll 13 to even hit the Archon. And then if they do, you know, there is still a hermit who stands behind and can cancel this one lucky roll. This list on the proper terrain can comfortably play into Grimkins. But I also noticed that if there will be too many buildings or too many forests where the clocks can where a Clockscar can teleport after getting a couple of hits, it's not that great. So at the end, we sort of avoided me playing into Grimkins. But that was a list that we made 1 week before list submission, and I was pretty happy with pairing. But of course, my main list was Harvey. And I was working out this list since Initiates dropped, because I was struggling as a Protectorate player. I was struggling tremendously against Circle and especially Kruger. And then Initiates solved the problem. So then I had to be able to play into rest of Circle meta with that list. And the build with four Crusaders. At first it was four Crusaders. Then I changed one Crusader into Sanctifier. Gave me a perfect trade. I feel that with four heavies in that list, you know, I can push this list to a perfect trade. Then a Sanctifier was add-on to have even more comfortable game into Scorn. Because then I played against Immortals with a feat, and that helps a lot. That helps a lot. Also, all the small pieces like mechanics and like mechanics are so important in that list. You know, like they're creating souls in, and they're triggering.
Hand of Vengeance
on Heavy Warjacks. Now, like I'm very happy with internal synergy of that list.
So I've already confessed this. I don't get to play as much versus Monoth as I would like to. Would you say that this is an unusual Harbinger build, or is this at this point somewhat mainstream? The Jack loadout seemed a little bit different than what I would be expecting.
A lot of people are playing Judicator as their main gun in the list, and I can fully understand it because it's making your. But again, you know, like Judicator build, it's making your good matchups even better. But the list with four Crusaders, it's in my eyes much more flexible because. You all of a sudden have 128 boxes just in Warjacks, then plus Initiates, plus Archons, plus Champions. You can take a lot of punishment, and then you can bring a counter game in a very nice way. Also, the way how you can divide your army, it's much easier with that list. So I think that Judicator option, it's super strong, but I like mine better. It's personal, I think, you know.
I think it's also about skill cap. I think the Judicator list is much better. His Crusader plus Sanctifier list is much harder because of the lack of Pathfinder. But if played correctly, four heavies are better every day.
Yeah, I mean, it does. Harbinger back in the day was a caster that I played a lot of, and you know, she's always been kind of an attrition grinder, and the point you make about having that many more hit boxes of Warjacks is a great point. It also, you know, with as spread out as the current Steamroller is, having being able to have additional threat vectors or additional places holding or additional places scoring obviously has additional value as well as compared to one huge base.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about this will probably be the last topic for this episode, and then we'll continue on in the next episode. But so you guys took two Menite Archons in every single Menoth list. So why don't we talk a little bit about the Menite Archon?
It's insane. It does everything for 8 points. It solved all our issues and made the problem matchups in Menoth even harder to deal with. I don't even know where to begin. Like, if you have just something, just an ability that supports the Archon, it pushes it to 11.
I think that model is probably worth 12 points, and you pay 8 for it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So do you, looking at, you know, we already know we've released two other Archons, and we have an idea of what some of the other ones are going to be doing. Do you think that the other Archons are going to be kind of on this same level, or do you think that the Menite one is going to be kind of head and shoulders above some of the other ones?
The other seems like more toolboxy to me. Like, there's a lot of people who are really looking forward to the Void Archon.
Yeah.
And I can see why, but it has matchups where maybe it doesn't do as good as the points it costs. But the Menite Archon is good in any game against any opponent. Right. There isn't any game that it's not good in.
I'm not too sure about it because I already managed to, after WTC, I already managed to try some other Archons, like Morrowind one, and I played against Void Archon today. And I think that the Archons, now that we're going to see a lot of Archons, and all of them, they synergize with their armies in a fantastic way. Only thing about Menite Archon is that he's very, very durable. I don't think that any other Archon can take as much punishment as Menite Archon. It's also due to the faction. I don't know how Horde's Archons are going to do in meta, but I think War Machine Archons are going to be great, and they're going to be a great addition to armies.
I think also you should look at like how some of the Archons will become friendly faction. That's such a strong ability, compared to when Archons are just a merc choice for a War Machine or Horus army.
Right.
And I still think I just saw the rules now for the Thamorite and the Void Archon. They came out probably like an hour ago.
Yeah, I think during the live stream that they just did with
Press. They look nice, but they're nowhere near as good as the Menite one.
I completely disagree. Void Archon, it's nuts, you know. I will tell you that, you know. He has such a great board control, and
it's because you play Harvey.
All right, you got me there.
I am kind of, there's a part of me that wants to play. I'm not sure what Merc Caster would be, maybe Fiona, or I don't know, but a list that's playing like an army of Archons, it would just be fun to play. I guess one last question on the Archons, and I'm going to have additional ones on them in the next episode, but what would you say are keys to getting value out of playing the Menite Archon, and what do you think people should do when they're playing against the Menite Archon?
So first step is don't commit your Archon before you actually need to. It's such a good, it has super long threat and is so scary that you can kind of use it like you used Lord of the Feast earlier, like keep him back and put your opponent on his heels, like don't commit. And also give it some space to Righteous Vengeance, because if you just have some spell that gives it longer threat, like either Dash from Sirenia and Vlad or Crusader's Call from Harvey, if you get those extra 3 inches from the Righteous Vengeance, you can tell the opponent that, yeah, it threatens 15 or 16 with Matt 8, Powell 17 or 19. Like, it scares the opponent so much that you can almost win on scenario without actually having to commit them. And for the opponent, kill it as soon as you can.
No, it's because Menite Archons are becoming a key piece of Protectorate armies, and I think, you know, like when you're playing against them, you have to sort of attract your opponent to go in with his Archon, So he will definitely score something big with that goal, and it's worth for him to go at you. But that's a good way of eliminating them. And then when they're down, then already, you know, like it's so much easier for someone who plays against a protectorate to deal with the rest. So yeah, that's my idea.
Yeah, so think of it like old Lord of the Feasts is kind of
great. So now we've got two of those fuckers.
Yeah,
in one list.
There's plenty of abilities like Bafalu on Fiona on Abyssal Gate and stuff. How you can move Archon, change his facing. Be careful with not triggering unnecessary hand of like. Swift Vengeance, right? That's how the ability is called. Now, like you just have to be very careful when you play it against them, and it's not easy to kill them, but they can die.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so I definitely will be continuing the conversation about Archons at the start of the next episode, but we can go ahead and stop here for this first episode. Wanted to thank you guys very much for being the guests on this. You guys have been fantastic so far, and thank you for making the time.
Thanks for having us.
That's right.
And thank you everyone for listening, especially thank you for the backers of Patreon. We appreciate that. And as always, this podcast is sponsored by Muse on Minis and sponsored by Discount Games Inc. So thank you everyone who supports us, and have a good night. We'll be right back.